Iran's president opens Euro-Persia Express Gateway project. Speaker of Iran's parliament criticizes Turkish foreign minister's remarks about Tehran. Iran equips IRGC airspace force with long-range missile launchers. The Iranian oil minister says Islamic Republic and India are set to boost bilateral relations. And Syrian army makes more gains against militants in Al-Hasir. In the name of God, the compassion of the merciful, hello everyone and welcome to this edition of IRN in English News with me, Nima Chitsas. Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad inaugurated Europe-Persia Express Gateway project in Tehran on Sunday. President Ahmadinejad inaugurated the project through video conference. The 8,000-kilometer Europe-Persia Express Gateway joins Frankfurt, Germany and Amman via Russia and Iran. The project was fully implemented by experts of Telecommunication Infrastructure Company of Iran. The Speaker of Iran's Majlis or the Parliament, Ali Larijani, has criticized the Turkish Foreign Minister's remarks about Tehran, saying supporting extremists only fuels tension in the region and intensifies the Syria crisis. Larijani said Ahmet Davutoğlu's accusations against Iran were untrue and wrong. He said, despite the unfounded allegations, no Iranian military forces or advisors are present in Syria. Larijani added that, unfortunately, certain regional countries are interfering in Syria's internal affairs and fanning the flames of the conflict in the country by sending arms for extremists and terrorist groups. Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps airspace force has been equipped with a large number of long-range surface-to-surface missile launchers. Iranian Defense Minister said the missile launchers have been jointly developed by Iran's Defense Ministry and the Aerospace Division of IRGC. Brigadier General Ahmad Vahidi further stated that the Islamic Republic's missile might is merely part of Iran's defensive capabilities used to safeguard peace and achieving deterrence. The minister added, Iran will give a crushing response to any act of aggression by enemies, making them regret their actions. Over the past years, Iran has made important breakthroughs in its defense sector and attained self-sufficiency in producing important military equipment and systems.
Iran's missile power is very decisive and important power today, and the country's enemies are very aware of it. Today, our long-range ballistic missiles can hit every designated target in a specified range with high precision.
Past experience and enemy threats have taught us the lesson that we have to be strong, and this is not the first time that we are delivering launchers to military units.
Iranian oil minister says the Islamic Republic and India are set to boost bilateral relations in the field of energy and other economic sectors. Rustam Wasavi arrived in New Delhi at the invitation of his Indian counterpart, M. Veerappa Moily, for 3 days of talks with high-ranking Indian officials over the expansion of bilateral ties in different sectors, including energy. Upon his arrival in India, Wasavi said, Tehran and New Delhi are willing to expand their cooperation in the energy sector. He added that the Islamic Republic, with its strong energy capacity, is also a major energy supplier to India. According to Iranian oil minister, the two sides will also discuss bilateral investments, including India's willingness to invest in Iran's southern Chabahar port. Iran has lashed out at French foreign ministry spokesman over his recent remarks on the forthcoming presidential elections in the Islamic Republic. In a statement released on Saturday, Iranian foreign ministry spokesman called on French authorities to avoid interfering in the internal affairs of other countries. Sayyid Abbas Araghchi urged them to address their own domestic problems instead. Meanwhile, Tehran condemned the terror bombing in the Iraqi capital Baghdad, which left a number of Iranian pilgrims dead and several others wounded. Araghchi warned that growing attacks against Iranian pilgrims overseas are part of an ongoing plot to foment religious divisions in the Muslim world. Elsewhere, Araghchi condemned the recent terrorist attacks in Niger. The Iranian official slammed the attacks as a plot designed by the enemies of Islam and the Muslim nation of Niger. Meantime, the Iranian foreign ministry spokesman reiterated Iran's sovereignty over the three Persian Gulf islands of Abu Musa, the Greater Tomb, and the Lesser Tomb. Araghchi cautioned the Persian Gulf Cooperation Council to avoid interventionist policies with regard to Iran's affairs. The remarks came after the PGCC's secretariat in its annual report, released on May 19, repeated its claims against Iran's sovereignty over the three Persian Gulf islands. And here's another look at tonight's top stories. Iran's president opens Europe-Persia Express Gateway project. Speaker of Iran's parliament criticizes Turkish foreign minister's remarks about Tehran. Iran equips IRGC airspace force with long-range missile launchers. Iranian oil minister says Islamic Republic and India are set to boost bilateral relations. And Syrian army makes more gains against militants in Al-Qasr. The Syrian army has made more gains in its fight against foreign-backed militants in the strategic city of Al-Qasr, a former militant stronghold in the western province of Homs. According to Syrian sources, government forces on Sunday managed to retake control of a media center in Ahli Hospital, which was being used by the militants as a field hospital. The army also cleared Al-Hamidiyah town in Al-Qasr countryside of militants fighting against the government. Scores of rebels are reported to be killed in the clashes. Syrian troops entered Al-Qasr from several directions on May 19 after weeks of clashes with militants. The Syrian army has kicked off the second phase of its operation in the town after successfully concluding the first phase of the battle. On Saturday, Syrian troops managed to retake control of Al-Qasr's military airport, as well as several key districts and buildings, including the headquarters of the Ba'ath Party. The Syrian army says it is in control of more than 80% of the strategic city, which connects the capital city of Damascus to the Mediterranean port of Tartus. Meantime, Syria foreign minister says Damascus has agreed in principle to take part in Geneva conference in June, which is aimed at ending Syria crisis. Walid Mualim made the remark during a news conference in the Iraqi capital Baghdad, saying Syria believes the international conference represents a good opportunity for a political solution to the crisis in Syria. Mualim arrived in Baghdad earlier on Sunday and has held talks with Iraqi foreign minister and Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki. Baghdad says it welcomes Syria's decision to attend the conference, known as Geneva II. Syrian opposition has yet to announce whether or not it will participate in the upcoming talks. Two rockets have hit the southern district of Zahiya in Lebanon's capital city of Beirut on Sunday. Several people were wounded in the incident, as some vehicles and homes were damaged. The security source said 107-millimeter rockets were used in the attack. There has been no claim of responsibility for the rocket attack so far. Lebanon's caretaker Interior Minister Marwan Charbel, who visited the site of the rocket attack, said it was an act of sabotage. The rocket incident in Beirut comes amid recent clashes between supporters and opponents of the Syrian government in Lebanon's northern city of Tripoli, which have led to the death of more than two dozen people. At least nine people were killed and 36 others wounded in bombings and shootings in northern and central Iraq on Sunday. Police said in one attack, two soldiers and a policeman were killed and 30 others wounded in two explosions near the city of Mosul. In Baghdad, unidentified gunmen intercepted a car in the northern part of the capital and shot dead three civilians and wounded the fourth. In another incident in Al-Anbar province, a roadside bomb went off near an army patrol in the city of Hit, killing two soldiers and wounding another. In a separate incident, another soldier was killed and three wounded in a roadside bomb explosion near an army patrol in the town of Amiriyat al-Fallujah. A third roadside bomb hit a federal police patrol in north of Fallujah, damaging a police vehicle and wounding a policeman aboard. In Saudi Arabia, protesters have taken to the streets in the country's oil-rich eastern province, calling on Riyadh to withdraw its security forces from Bahrain. The demonstrators accuse Saudi officials of committing crimes against the pro-democracy protesters in Bahrain. They slammed Saudi Arabia for supporting and helping MENAMA and its violent crackdown on the Bahrainis. They called for the release of political prisoners. The The demonstrators also called on international rights groups to speak out against the continuous torture and abuse of Saudi Arabian prisons. Now in Europe, the suburbs of Sweden's capital, Stockholm, continue to witness angry protests as more cars have been torched and clashes have been reported between the police and demonstrators. The protests began on May 19, 6 days after police shot dead a 69-year-old man who had locked himself in an apartment in Husby, a poor district in western Stockholm. Activists say the shooting caused anger among the youths in Husby, who say they have suffered from racism and feel excluded from the Swedish society. On Saturday, police said a handful of cars had been set ablaze in several of Stockholm's suburbs, which are mainly populated by immigrants and asylum seekers. This comes as in the southern suburb of Varberg, youths threw rocks at a police patrol. Police used tear gas to disperse a group of protesters who were throwing stones at them in the nearby district of Jordbro. The ongoing unrest in Sweden has prompted the British Foreign Office and the United States Embassy in Stockholm to issue warnings, urging their citizens to stay away from the troubled areas. Greece's economy shrank 5.3% in the first quarter as expected. Data released last week showed that Greece entered its sixth straight year of recession, as well as unemployment, which is still hitting record highs, and consumers are squeezed by pay cuts and tax hikes. Our correspondent has the details.
In Greece, the Greek recovery phenomenon is trying to win over the hearts and minds of ordinary people and international opinion makers alike. The relative optimism seems to be spilling over to most public policy players, both in Greece and abroad, yet it remains an ill-founded suggestion. True, the recent offensive de charme investment trip of Premier Samaras was impressive and well-rounded, while tourism receipts are expected greater than ever before. Notwithstanding some first revival signs, the effects of recovery have yet to be felt in the real economy, a nailing economy bashed and clouted by consecutive waves of austerity and contraction policies. Data, though, speak for themselves. The economy and therefore society itself is sinking. Unemployment is still hovering over 27%. The public debt to GDP ratio is over 160%. Industrial investment dropped 20% last year, and deflation stands at 0.6%. In the meanwhile, new projections for a 5% contraction rate of the economy are coming to light for 2013, while the Greek GDP has dropped lower than 170 billion euros in 2012. The few businesses that have managed to survive are choking due to the lack of cash flow, and new, flexible forms of labor are emerging and establishing themselves as a new trend. The investment climate is not that shiny nor welcoming either. Post-PSI Greek bonds are now safe and less attractive, and bond spreads have dropped. But investors keep looking at Greece as a guinea pig, going for short selling rather than long-term investments. Credit rating agencies such as Fitch and reports from the European Commission are all predicting additional cuts, predicting Greece will probably need additional assistance in the near future, either in the form of lowered interest rates, extension of loans, or new bailouts. Morale is improving in Greece, yet economic stability is dragging on, far behind it. Despite the overwhelmingly optimistic projections of the Minister of Finance for a return to growth by the last quarter of 2014, as well as some first optimistic tokens of confidence from the markets, such as the upgrading of Greece by the credit rating agency Fitch, the situation on the ground is very much so different. Unemployment is still hovering over 27% within the general population, and the public debt to GDP ratio is still over 160%. Lucas Romanos, Shabaka Kabar, Athens.
And on that note, we're going to wrap up this edition of Our Eye on English News. Join us tomorrow with the latest updates. Goodbye now.